Welcome to season four of The Culture of Kindness. My name is Nahala Summers and I am your host. A culture of kindness is based on the idea that by bringing kindness into leadership, we reduce stress, anxiety, make happier workplaces, and in turn, improve the bottom line for any organization or institution. It is a book, leadership program, accreditation, and of course, this wonderful podcast. Kindness has been my life's work since I founded the social movement for kindness back in 2012 called Sunshine People. And it has kept me interested on what people have to say on the complexities of kindness ever since. The guest lineup is exceptional, from politicians to social media influencers, best-selling authors to BBC presenters, an eclectic mix of people who all have completely different views on kindness, how we get it, and where the world is currently at. If you enjoy this episode, then please do show your support for kindness by subscribing to the podcast, leave a five-star review, or simply invest in the book, aptly named A Culture of Kindness, available on Amazon. Thanks so much. I hope you enjoy. Gareth, thank you so much for coming on and being a guest on A Culture of Kindness podcast. Really looking forward to having a conversation with you and possibly taking some learnings away from the things that you've been experiencing, but also talk about some of your work and personal life and how that interlinks. But I guess, first of all, if we can just start with sharing a little bit about you, your work, and really what makes you happy.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Nahala. I am so pleased and privileged to be here. Looking through the kind of alumni of prior speakers, I feel very honoured and in your good stewardship to help me through these. So a little bit about me. Grew up in sunny Staffordshire, now live in Berkshire, so a very, very leafy part of the world. Married to Jessica. We've been married 17 years. Maybe hoping actually some of your podcasters can tell me a good 17th wedding anniversary, because so far it's furniture and I'm just not sure that's the right thing, to be honest. We have a young son, Luca, who is growing up to be an athletic young man, very tall already. Worked around the world, both in the US, in Europe, in Asia, largely in the kind of finance and technology sectors. So what makes me happy in all of that is definitely time with my family. That is a big plus. I love situational comedy. Some of it is absolutely terrible, but absolutely. I'm not big on crude. I like kind of funny things that people notice about how we operate and live in society. Eddie Izzard, massive fan of his. I like being active. I like exploring and so massively into learning more about nature at the moment.
Love that. I do want to touch on your UK bushcraft kind of later on and that kind of linking in. And I love that you mentioned comedy there. I think comedy is very underestimated in a world where we talk about mental health, but what we feed ourselves and feed our brains ultimately has a huge impact. And comedy is really there, isn't it? In terms of kind of the food for us, for our brains. Just talk about your current position and your current role that you do. You know, you're talking from, we've previously spoken from kind of your home and your garden, but now you're in the office and maybe share a bit about that.
Exactly. You find me in the office, quite a rarity given that we're, kind of still pandemic-esque, but hopefully coming out the back of that now. So I work for Virgin Media O2. Very recently, the kind of last summer, was the largest piece of kind of merger and acquisition in the UK market. So a humongous organization. We provide everything from kind of TV, broadband and mobiles to consumers, all the way to services, to businesses. My role over the last kind of 2-3 years now has been preparing that organization, specifically in the services where we provide where we provide services to our B2B clients for that merger. And that has been kind of an interesting, you referenced that kind of prior conversation. I think the way I describe it is it's like an oscillating wave. There are some high points and there are some low points. There are so many differences between the organizations. There are so many similarities between the two organizations. And that's definitely been a learning for me in the last kind of couple of years.
Yeah. But I mean, when you've put in and been part of this kind of change program and merging, which just to me seems huge, between two organizations, what have been the first thing and previous, I guess, but what have been the first things that you consider when you start something like that?
Oh, crikey, that's an amazing question. I think first, it's always good to kind of understand the context of the, I mean, this example was the two businesses coming together. You know, they had very different parents, something that kind of makes me smile when I think about it, in terms of one was a kind of a European owner, one was an American owner. One had much more of a history in consumer businesses and kind of media brand. One was a greater champion, but kind of really was keen to grow the B2B side of the organization. When you think about then bringing together the different people, the way that they operate, the cultures, the fact that we have different systems, yeah, there are many things to balance. What has come really clear to me is that because we are such a large organization, we have the opportunity to influence the good and the better for society more than we did on those kind of small, not that either of us are small scale, but on those two individual businesses. I think when I kind of think about bringing together that program or any program at all, it's about being clear on what success looks like. And I mean by that is kind of simplifying the goals. So setting up a program, and again, just referencing the merger, what is important to the shareholder is different to what's important to the colleague. And so actually being able to simplify the goals and simplify the message to all is really important. And you can still communicate all of those things at the same time. I don't think anybody deserves not to know the rounded picture. But I'm really keen to always translate what those success criteria mean. So as an example, when you bring together two organizations, there is the opportunity to sell services to both the historical customer base. That would be a better way of describing growth synergy than as an example. I think the second thing in terms of understanding and simplifying the outcomes and translating that to all would be then just consistent engagement and communication with people. And that can be multiple different forums. I mean, it was tough and it was hard during the pandemic because effectively we went through due diligence, merger, and then post-integration all from home. And that was hard when you couldn't necessarily meet and see and build that social connection with many of the colleagues that you were working with. So being consistent with engagement, sharing those simplified messages. I think the next thing that I do when setting up programming, and this is generic, is have a kind of ruthless focus on performance, not results. I see too often people measure the outcome and not actually the journey to get to that outcome. And I've seen many people kind of take short-term decisions because of that. I'm not sure it's last, but I guess on my list that I'm thinking lastly is listen to people, take multiple inputs, because actually I might have a good knowledge of some areas, but I won't have a knowledge of everything. So the more that I understand, the quicker I can then get to decisions. And actually at the point I've taken those inputs, prioritize them quickly in terms of what decisions we're going to make.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we feel often like we need to know it all and then we have to tell people rather than go, actually, I don't know, and that's okay. You know, and that leads me to asking really, if you consider yourself the leader that you were at the beginning of your career when you started in a leadership role to the leader that you now are, what are the biggest things that you've learned and changed about your style?
Well, I think I've always had a desire to serve, at least, anyhow, maybe not lead. Prior to meeting Jessica, my wife, I wanted to join Sandhurst as an officer in the British Army. And actually, at the point of which I met Jessica, I didn't feel that was probably appropriate for me to think about signing up and then, you know, traveling the world in a very different style of activity. But that wanting to serve, and I love the Royal Military Academy's ethos of serve to lead. I think that's an incredible kind of motto and value. So I think I've always had that passion inside. I think also probably selfishly, I would have started my career thinking that it was about me and my performance and not about that of others. As I've, I guess, grown, matured, experienced more things, I've definitely become far more selfless in the way that I develop others. Again, an example, in the same way that I see people focus on results and not performance, I see people almost nudging people's personal development to benefit the outcome of those in role or the business, and not those at an individual perspective. What else have I kind of grown and made sure that I do more of from my other career? Gratitude, you know, recognition, saying thank you. You know, you from small gestures to grand gestures, actually, it does go such a long way. It's ironic because it's not spontaneous, but I have a reminder in my diary once a month that's called Spontaneous Recognition Day, where I just drop a note out to all the team, say, today's the day we should say thank you to lots of different people. And we have like a corporate recognition scheme to do that. But it's just a good and as a way of helping to remind people that they feel valued and are recognized. I think also, I would like to think that courage has been a value that I've begun to embody more over the years, is that I've become much more candid and then being braver explaining why we're doing things, not what or how, which again would also be a kind of a learning from my younger self.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is so true, isn't it? I mean, I'd love to touch on kind of kindness in leadership, you know, where that's sat historically and where it currently sits moving forwards, because, you know, you've touched on so many of the values from our research at Culture of Kindness around gratitude, around time and being present and listening to people, and this idea of courage. You know, it's one of the least talked about within kindness, but the courage to actually stand up and say the truth, because we often go, oh, we don't want to tell somebody that this is not working or it's not performing, and it snowballs, and you know, there's so many elements to courage within leadership, I think. But and so you touch on so many wonderful parts of it, but where do you think kindness has sat historically in the leadership conversation, and where do you think it's going to sit moving forwards as we move into a kind of another era, really?
Yeah, so I think there's so many ways I could answer this question, and kind of want to, almost referencing some of the items we've just been talking about, but also you touched on emotional intelligence as well, which I think plays a big key part of this. So my experience would be that historically, kindness would come from few in the organization, and often those that are maybe in the kind of dawn of their career and want to pass on their knowledge and wisdom to others. As a kind of almost a handover per se. I do think that's different though going forward. I still think that in the organization, those that are wanting to pass on their wisdom and knowledge, it's because it's a passion, that like almost in a teaching way, or those that want to help the next generation not make the same mistakes that they do. I definitely still see that. But I also think if I look at the new recruits we have coming in, our apprentices, our graduates, our interns, they're just so much more socially aware. There's so much more built into ethical decision-making. And so I genuinely hope, pint half full, that actually we've got a workforce that's coming in wanting to make fairer trade decisions, that's thinking about the length of supply chain, that's thinking about how you become more net zero. So I do think kindness, in many different facets, it is changing. What is also interesting in kindness is, what is kindness? And that's probably one of the hardest questions to answer in the first place. I've seen lots of times where there is positive intent, but the outcome can still be negative. And as an example, what do I mean by that? Typically organizations measure colleague engagement. And I've seen examples of where people almost try to buy engagement for reasons of positive intent, but actually it's short term. It might be, let's get a pizza in tomorrow type thing, which might not be great from a health perspective, but it is definitely fun, right? Let's not deny that.
Yeah. Who doesn't love a pizza?
So I think you can still have positive intent of kindness, but it can still be almost negative. So I do think there's a difference going forward in the organization. I do think there's an absolute responsibility from top down in terms of where you set culture, the way you lead by example. I think you are responsible for your own almost ways of working, your own values as an individual. And I can see benefit through organizations taking greater responsibility through their kind of corporate social responsibility, through legislation coming through in terms of things like carbon neutral taxes and et cetera. Mm-hmm. But by and large, I think there's a greater understanding that kindness, everybody has a part to play, not just the manager or the leader.
Yeah, absolutely. It filters. It's a little like, I've just been writing about this recently, is this kind of civic duty, the behaviours that we all have and how that impacts our neighbours, for example, in a social setting. And that goes with our workplaces and kind of that consideration of having social awareness. As you say, you know, I have great hope for the new generations coming in, because I think they, you know, we are more enlightened than our parents, in the whole, mostly, I would suggest. And our children will be more enlightened than we have ever been. And that gives me hope that we will be more empathetic, that we will be kinder, you know. It's wonderful that you talk about kind of that you see that as well. Virgin and O2 coming together, huge. Are you able to, very difficult, I know, but are you able to share any of that journey and maybe some of the challenges, or even one of the challenges, and how it kind of got overcome? I know you touched on it in the beginning, but it'd be lovely to get an example of that, if not a few.
Yeah, so I'll try and... So I kind of mentioned the parents before, right? Mm. And I think that's a wonderful analogy, just because, whether you are a parent or not, if anybody's a parent or not, you try to do your best, and sometimes it works well and sometimes it doesn't. That there is no doubt that there are differences in the way that our mum and dad, Telefonica and Liberty Global, treated us as children. And I don't mean that children as in a kind of behavioral perspective. I just mean in terms of kind of how the organizations were defined. So that was interesting because, you know, one was definitely more autonomous than the other. One was definitely more focused on performance. One was more focused on results. One was more focused on wanting to help. One was more hands-off. One was created greater almost brand and kind of customer engagement from within the center. One allowed the local country or operation to run it. And none of those things are right or wrong. They're just different business models. And actually what that stems to is that largely both organizations of O2 and Virgin Media, I would say, have the same values, which is brilliant from a kind of people and a kindness and an empathy and ways of working, because you're being driven for the same kind of common purpose. Mm. But maybe the way that we went about running our businesses was quite different in terms of control or the practice. And that's definitely has at times, you know, you're trying to all do the right thing from an intent perspective, but doesn't necessarily mean that the way you do it is quite polar opposite. I'm trying to do it without giving away too much information and still sound extraordinarily positive, of which it is. We are two large brands that, as a result, have a high expectation of the market, and our customers have big demands of us. And so actually what that allows you to be is to make a bigger difference. And I touched on it earlier on. During the pandemic, there were so many things we did around helping colleagues to cope with well-being, you know, setting them up from work from home, being really flexible of how we recognize that the school run or that looking after a visiting a family member had just changed. Mm. So I think it was definitely more empathetic during that kind of last couple of years. And actually we're coming out now trying to work out what's the right balance of how you still allow convenience, flexibility, and a business goal to be delivered, but at the same time recognizing that things have just quantum shifted in the way that we work and behave. Mm. Definitely, if I think about inclusion, both organizations did this so well, both accessibility and inclusion. I mean, February this month is a kind of the kind of celebrating history of LGBTQ+. And there is so much understanding now, more than there was historically within the organization, recognition of how different people and kind of what drives them, how they may have felt or how they've been appreciated or how they've been recognized, and whether that's the work we do around disabilities, whether that's the work we do around inclusion, whether that's of accessibility areas, whether that's what we do kind of almost for kind of ethnic minorities. There's just so much more that we start to understand. And I think that's been one of the absolute plus points. You talk about your civic duty, if you like, from post-COVID. I think we've got a greater understanding of what that looks like. Mm. And one of the things that's been amazing to be part of is something called the digital exclusion, which is where it can be really expensive for families to connect computers or iPads to mobile devices, which actually, when every child has been sent from home to work from home, that's unnecessary bills or a cost that wasn't planned for and maybe not even be able to be funded in the kind of household budget. And so we've kind of created what we call data banks, where people can request additional capacity so that if their children require it when they're at home, they can use it. And that's just a small but a big difference, all driven from an act of kindness of when one mum wrote a letter.
Yeah. It feels to me that there's, you know, as you've gone through that change, there's been a lot of questions asked. It's not been, oh, we went in and we just decided that this, just what I feel, that, you know, there was, well, how do you work? And how does this work? And how do we make this come together? Would that be right? Would that be the kind of the approach that came across?
Yeah, great observation. Great observation. Yeah, it has. It's been very open, but very transparent. The there's a genuine recognition that both parties do things differently, and it's the what can we do to make it better or to make it a single way of working. Now, we're still a way away from creating one way of working. And that's that kind of oscillation that I referred to earlier on. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. But there is a genuine openness to understand both sides and both parties.
Yeah. I mean, it has all happened over COVID, which is, you know, would be a challenge. And it has been a challenge in itself for one organisation to then merge at during that time. Incredibly challenging. What impact has COVID had on the teams, do you think? And I guess also, do you think that working from home or face-to-face impacts the health and well-being or productivity of people? You know, what is that? What does that look like?
I think there's definitely yes to some of those things. I think there's been impacts to people throughout COVID being at home. And again, I think there are some positives and I think there are some negatives and I think there are some items now as we come out of this, people returning to the office, that we've still got to learn about. As an example, I think it's amazing that I've been welcomed into so many people's homes, that I know what the pictures look like in their kitchen or the kind of, oh, look, you've got a new plant in your little office, you know, or you're working outside today. We've just seen much more acceptable access to people's home, and it just happened overnight. And there was no point has that been judgmental in the way that that's happened. You remember that, and I'm sure everybody remembers the famous BBC interview where the small child comes into the interview when he's on the phone to the BBC doing a Zoom call, and like it didn't go so well. Whereas now, actually, if a dog's not barking, if the doorbell's not ringing, if somebody doesn't come in or walks past while you're on a call or a video, it feels peculiar that that's not the kind of norm. So, we're definitely much more transparent and open that we have a kind of a home environment that exists beyond the work. I think the plus side of that has also been the convenience and flexibility. I mean, I knew throughout the pandemic, especially when people were shielding, you know, team members were visiting relatives or making sure that they had been collecting their shopping or dropping off their children and then kind of logging on later or earlier to kind of counter that balance. That flexi working, I think, has taken a different approach. I don't think we know the answer to that yet, but I think that's going to be a really interesting debate where different organizations take different stances. But again, if we're measuring the right performance and we're measuring the right outcomes, I think we can make it work. And I'm definitely an advocate of increased flexibility post the kind of pandemic. I think some of the downsides, I think there's that there has been a lacking of social interaction. And I think that's kind of just broader now in the kind of mental health problems that are going to be built up. You know, you can see people are worried about leaving their home. You can see people are nervous about coming back into the office, whether that's from a convenience perspective, whether that's from a cost perspective, or they've been sheltering for so long, I don't want to put myself at risk. You can see that people are, when they do come back in and get together, the first thing they talk about is being there, as opposed to maybe just more generic things about life or work. So I think I feel there's a really big and great responsibility that when I do bring people together, that it's not just to sit at a desk in the office and replicate a slightly greater social interaction than there would have been at home, actually create more of a need. So that means we will have a lunchtime walk. An option for a lunchtime walk, let me put it that way. Yeah. If that means we do get the pizza that we talked about not being healthy earlier on, but everybody loves it. There's the ability to facilitate better communication and more intent by bringing people in. But I am worried for what the mental health consequences are in a world post-COVID.
Yeah, I agree. And I love that. It is about doing business in a different way, you know, doing the walk. you know, as we're in a period of growth in terms of my work and my businesses, you know, it's about actually setting up and facilitating a monthly meeting that's all around driving culture, getting people together and having a good time in that. And I think it's hugely important to change the way that we do things to meet people. What I loved, and I have not heard anybody talk about that, is about being welcomed into people's homes, you know, and that happened. And, you know, I talk about that we grew a level of empathy, but I love your look on that because I think it's hugely important. But I also really hear from you, and particularly the organization that you're working in, is this need to look at individuals being individuals. Nobody is put under this umbrella of, well, we're all going to come into the office and be more productive, or we're all going to work from home, but looking at everybody as an individual. And I've heard you reference that quite a lot. Would you say that that was right, this need to look at everybody as an individual rather than kind of put everybody under an umbrella?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think one of the questions you asked earlier on about kindness and where it sits in the kind of hierarchy of leadership is almost going to be that it requires a bravery for people to be more open about their individual situations, to then allow the kind of empathy to be reciprocated because of that knowledge. Mm. Just a great example of that. So one of the team is going to be out for 6 weeks with an operation. Historically, and this is her words, she would have told me that she was just out for an operation. We actually had a conversation about what the operation was. And it's a very private and specific operation. But actually, I was just honored that she didn't just tell me that there was a need to not be in the office for health reasons, but actually this was the reason, this was the implications, this is kind of what the impact it causes on her life. And I was like, wow, we have so changed. That is an accepted norm.
Yeah, it is. And that ability to feel that we've got safety, you know, and I talk about this a lot within the work, is about people feeling safe enough to share openly without any consequences that they think might come from that. And that's hugely important. I mean, in terms of the productivity of teams, what have you found to be the biggest impactor of productivity? Is it this kind of ability to feel that you can share openly, or is it something else?
I think so. I'm going to kind of answer the question twofold. I'm going to answer it in a with some positives and some negatives, both in terms of COVID and in normal times. But let's just kind of keep referring to the kind of pandemic first. So there has definitely been positivity of individuals being better understood and feeling a greater sense of value from that flexibility and a higher level of empathy. And I would definitely say that there was an increased level of empathy in lockdown one societally than there was in lockdown two and lockdown three. You could see that we were getting tired from that. One of the things that I think has become a greater constraint is time management. And I think in some ways we're more time poor in the work now, where it's almost like if there was a gap in the diary, it would get filled and you would just kind of spend an entire day going from Zoom call to phone call to voice to video call, and then getting at the end of the day when all the calls are finished to do some work. And that proactive time management and being more demanding of your time is definitely required. I mean, one of the things I personally quite like about going into the office versus being at home is I get the chance to decompress on the way home. So in the morning, if I'm not taking my son to school, I tend to have listened to a kind of like business or financial podcast on the way in, because it kind of almost gees me up ready for the work ahead. And on the way home, I would listen to sport or comedy. And by the time I got home, I was ready to kind of almost unlocking the door was about being at home, not about being at work anymore. You know, turning your screen off and then walking out that room you're working in isn't decompression. And I definitely miss that. And that's a kind of thing from an impact of productivity, at least for me, from a kind of mental health perspective. I think from a normal perspective, role clarity is so important in terms of that kind of psychological safety that you're referring to, and in terms of allowing somebody to know whether they're being successful or not. If somebody knows exactly what's expected of them, the part that they play, and that they are aligned with their peers that are also playing in that same team, I always see just high performing teams full stop. Yeah. I think the more that you connect with your team and interact, both in terms of giving them an update on, you know, performance, as it were, as much as about just having some downtime of fun, as much as it's about talking about topics that we wouldn't normally cover to kind of expand and grow, is really helpful. And I guess the point I would get to there is that role clarity with an environment of kind of learning agility and personal growth just leads to more successful outcomes, in my opinion. And I've seen so many times that highly engaged teams that have been given increased development outperform larger teams.
Yeah, absolutely. We've touched a little on emotional intelligence, and I guess that leads on to it. You know, emotional intelligence is, although it's been around, you know, the conversation started in the 70s, it's really only started to make its place in leadership. Do you believe there's still room for a conversation in workplaces that needs to develop and grow around emotional intelligence?
100%, yes. I see too often that we just class emotional intelligence as emotional awareness, and that's it. One of my first ever coaches, a lady called Jeanette Granger, gave me the Daniel Goleman book, and it just changed the way I think about so many things so early in my career. And you mentioned I wish you'd heard about it sooner, but that was a classic example. So thank you, Jeanette. It's much appreciated. There's an element of kind of having the conversation, making it a topic where people can understand self-awareness themselves, you know, whether that's through feedback, whether that's through just share, you know, creating an environment where people share how they feel, and kind of being able to, in return, explain their own feelings. That consistently will build an increased self-awareness. Yeah. I think you can help as a line manager to support the self-motivation piece in terms of helping to be structuring around goals and tasks and activities. And I think there is an innate piece in yourself about that social awareness, that empathy that you give. And I think your whole culture of kindness, the more that we can do in terms of helping people to understand their social awareness, their civic duty, the empathy they can show of others in the organization will definitely help. And I think the bit that I would like to see practiced more in the workplace, to sum up, is less about emotional awareness and about emotional regulation. So at the point of which you know, how do you then relate, connect, act, and kind of be more respectful of others at that point in time, knowing that you know.
Yeah, incredibly powerful. Changing the whole way that conflict happens, the way that we interact in meetings, ultimately then affects everything that we do in our productivity, right? And I guess the way that people go home at the end of every day, and the way that they interact with their loved ones, and, you know, as you so well put, you know, it's about that kind of role, and you're then changing into, now I'm a husband and a father, but I need to know how I can do that from being at work, where I'm somebody different. I think that's incredibly powerful. What are your top tips for kind of that happy team and the kind of work and life, you know, and I'm not going to say work-life balance because that's not true, but that kind of journey that you go on and the differences between the two, because I know that you have UK bushcraft. I'd love for you to talk about how that impacts you and your work and how that kind of aligns in as well.
Yeah, sure. So I think happy to it is funny. I'm intrigued to see what will replace the words work-life balance, because that's going to have to be a new terminology that we get into the business lexicon, as it were. I think I'll answer this in terms of both some individually about the kind of what I think makes a happy team and also personally. It was definitely a learning, as you asked earlier on about kind of my own personal progress in leadership, is that I become more aware that there's a need for work, home, and self balance in terms of time. Now, they're not like kind of 33% that I put into each one of those, but I know that if the balance becomes out of kilter of any one of those three, that I start maybe being more grumpy than I should be, or kind of just lacking that little bit of time for myself. And whilst I'm quite comfortable in an extrovert environment, I would say naturally I'm introvert, and that self time is really important. Hence, kind of we'll come on to UK bushcraft in a bit. So understanding where you spend your time and regulating if that's not the appropriate time. And that can be dialing up being a better husband or father, or kind of knowing when you've got to do a bit more work or time for yourself. I think there's bringing yourself to work is acceptable. We kind of touched on that in terms of all of the inclusion and accessibility piece. I think it's far more accepted, and that's going to be one of the benefits of the kind of pandemic, again, having been invited to people's homes. But it's about being consistent with those behaviors, and even though you're going to bring yourself and all the things, it's just making sure that's you're the same person all the time and not keep flitting between different styles. And so whilst I'm a little bit of a different person in work and out of work, I am still the person in work that I am out of work. For me, it was about being clear with my own goal. And whenever I spend any time on kind of personal development or coaching or mentoring of others, the question I'll ask them is, what's your why? And I spent a long time understanding that, to the point of which it just allows me such a great level of freedom to then perform in the work environment.
Yeah, absolutely. So with regards to Bushcraft UK, you know, what is it and how does that impact your work, really, and how you feel about your work?
Well, thank you so much for asking. Definitely was started as a passion project. Whilst I created this as a kind of side business during in 2020, actually the outdoors, kind of almost playing in the fields, making dens, something I've been an expert at since I was about 5 years old. So love that. But that kind of turned into a project. I created a social media account that then became a bit of a following. I then sensed like I had a responsibility, and ultimately I would like UK Bushcraft to be almost my retirement plan, if I'm being quite frank. It's going to be a place where I organize and facilitate outdoor learning, both in terms of the world of the wilderness, but also in terms of coaching and mentoring. I'm organizing expeditions already. So we were going out to Sweden again in May for a group, and that's just incredible, just living out in the kind of wilderness. In fact, if you think about Maslow's physiological needs, the fire, water, food, and warmth, they are the four kind of cornerstones, pillars of bushcraft, right? And so I should get lots of practice in kind of creating those. And so ultimately, I want to get to a place where the learnings I've had from business that I can share with others, facilitate in an environment outdoors and potentially teach people a few different skills.
Yeah, it is. I love what you're doing because you're bringing, you know, we have been historically within leadership, you know, we're indoors, we're sat in an office, we're sat in walls, and it's not necessarily a place to grow creativity, right? And it, you know, there's more and more research, there's more and more conversations having that. And what you've done really is bring the creativity by people being outdoors. You know, we know that impact on our health. And was that a conscious decision to say, actually, there is a real need for this? Or was it just kind of, I love doing this, and I recognize that there's a need, and the following happened?
Yeah, so definitely started out almost with the former, just as a passion and an interest. But I quickly realized, almost from my work life, that there is so much transferable skills in terms of the ability to be outside, the ability to be connected to nature, the ability to be somewhere more creative, as you referenced. Well-being is something that actually being more outdoors during the pandemic was something I think many, many people enjoyed. I mean, I'll tell you one of the byproducts that is just an amazing little story, which is that to make a cup of tea, you need to have processed and made water safely. You'd need to have made a fire, which means you know need to know how to make a fire, which means you need to have collected the fuel and the resources, which means you need to have found a place that's kind of inappropriate shelter and an appropriate place to make a fire. It can take you 90 minutes to make a cup of tea. But actually, if you're proactive in planning when you need to capture some of those resources, your time management skills become so good at multitasking. And there is no doubt that just a small activity like that has made me more efficient in the workplace.
Yeah, it is. It's incredible. So if people wanted to come and join, you know, you in Sweden in May or any of your expeditions, how would they do that? How can they join up? Because I guess it's not just for leaders as well. It's for anybody. But how would they do that?
Yeah, thank you so much for giving me a chance to plug this. If they go via either LinkedIn or Instagram, please just search UK Bushcraft. Give us a follow and then we'll reach out and connect.
You know, I just have to say as well, while we're talking about it, you know, I see it right now where people are working from home. People are, you know, our whole social lives have transformed. I can remember, you know, when I used to go out to the pubs and bars many moons ago, and I lived up in Leeds at the time, and it was 2004, something like that. And I left. I went and worked abroad for 2 years, went and worked out in the Middle East, and I came back. And nobody was socializing. I don't know what happened. I think we had the smoking ban come in as well. And the pubs were not the same. And so that's continued. But also what continued with that was then we had COVID. And then we changed everything. You know, the way people meet now is through just a different way that kind of human connection and interaction is so important. And yeah, so I think UK Bushcraft kind of ticks that box as well, where people can go, actually, I want to go, I want to do something practical, I want to learn something more about myself and grow my own skills, but I want to meet new people, I want to socialize, I want to have those interactions. Do you feel that that was, you know, that was a side product of everything that you've set up here?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I have met and learn from people that I wouldn't have ever met in my walk of life without doing this. So yeah, 100% agree with that. And there is, if anybody's after the best thing to watch on TV, actually it's an open fire in the woods, crackling, spitting out light. When it's a bit cold, it's just the most mesmerizing thing to take your gaze for hours. So come and join us.
Yes, I did recently do that just before COVID in Slovakia. I was sat watching it and hours. And then they started singing around the campfire and it was just something I can really my singing is awful, like, you know, cats run away from me, but I was singing anyway because I didn't care at that point. It was just wonderful. And yeah, it's as old as time itself, isn't it?
Thank you.
We've probably gone over. I don't care. It was such a great podcast with so many takeaways. I'm going to be re-listening to this myself going, oh, that's so good. I need it. And of course, you brought up so many things from that we work on a culture of kindness as well. And that was just confirmation bias for me that we're doing the right work. And that felt great. So yes, I've had big ego boost. Love the episode. But I always end on the final question. What does a culture of kindness look like to you?
I've definitely got a saying. I've got a few sayings, but more so, more than anything, at the point of which I go to join the big podcast in the sky, I would like to be remembered, but not missed. And I would like people to think that I made a difference. And I think it can be best summed up, and I remember exactly where I was when I first saw this quote across somebody's screensaver on a computer desktop. And then it read, "It's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice."
Wonderful. Love it. Thank you so much, Gareth, for your time. It's been insightful, and I know the listeners will have loved this episode as much as I have. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for listening. If you have loved this episode, please do share it with others. Pop on and give a lovely review, but mostly take forwards into your life something that can change someone else's. We are looking for the elusive happiness, and kindness is the action that can get us there.